this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey guys, welcome to Y'allitics. We are at Tupp's Brewery in McKinney. This is downtown McKinney. I haven't been up here in a while, just for a minute, so don't hold it against me, but it's across from the flour mill up here. This place is awesome.
It is amazing. You know, we have this running list of our favorite places, and I think that this might, you know,
easily
get way up there. This is a really nice setup here, I'm glad that we made it here. I don't think we've done any of these in McKinney.
We haven't, and thanks for pointing that out to everyone.
It takes us time sometimes.
Good move, Wheeler.
Texas is a big state.
You know what else I like, too, is that our guest who got here before Wheeler also pointed out, oh, he did make it after all.
You know, but then I had to point
out. Every time I tell you guys that he doesn't show up on time, he never shows up on time.
What is on time, though?
It's the time we set to be there.
We set to do this at 1 p.m. today as we're recording this. Yeah. I got here at 12:55, had my microphone plugged in, my questions out, my beer ordered by like 12:59.
Well, the beer is on you today, too. So, what are you having, by the way?
I am having the Hefeweizen today, and I detect a hint of some kind of citrus in there, which I really like.
Which you like fruit.
I may be wrong on this, but I think it's got citrus.
I'm having the Eastside Lager, and I think, I should have asked, but this is like the first beer on the menu, so I think this is probably one of their more popular beers.
Oh, okay. I didn't know I got a less popular beer, but
pay attention, Wheeler. All right. So listen, I'm excited about this podcast here because I haven't talked to this person since COVID. And you look at the calendar, COVID was just, 4 years ago, but it seems like a lifetime ago, considering everything we've been through and everything our guest has been through.
Well, just in the period of COVID, that was like a lifetime, that window. And then the 4 years since has been nuts. We think we've been through some things in that time. Let's bring her in. We've got Representative-elect Shelley Luther with us. You may, depending on where you're listening in Texas, you're thinking, I've heard that name, but you may not remember exactly how you've heard that name, but we will refresh that. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Thanks. Thanks for being here.
And you're having a soda, we'll point out today. There's never peer pressure on this podcast. and you've got good reason. You told us, hey, I'm going to refrain from a beer today.
Yes.
We alluded to this. You have been through some stuff. So first of all, congratulations on the election.
Thank you.
The new representative for District 62, which is up in Sherman, right near the Oklahoma border.
Sherman, Denison, and then Delta County over to the east.
And Franklin,
as well.
Too.
And Franklin County.
Don't forget anybody.
Yes. No. And
also congratulations for getting through what you've been through lately. Tell us a little bit about what happened.
Are you talking about
which part? Nice open question.
We'll start.
If you ask my husband,
tell me
he'll
your
be
life
like,
story.
Which part are you talking about?
I ask the same thing all the time. So let's start with the aneurysm last year. You posted on social media a year ago, you had this aneurysm, and most people aren't supposed to survive this. You did.
No, it was a year and a half ago, April 4th in 2023. My husband and I are both musicians. He plays piano. I'm a singer. We were coming home from a gig. And I went to take my earring out and set it on my nightstand, and my head just felt like it was going to just explode off of my shoulders. And a lot of people are like, is it just a really bad headache? And I'm like, nope. It feels like kind of like Fred Flintstone on a cartoon where he hits his thumb and it feels like, whoa. Mm-hmm. But it physically feels like my whole head is doing that. And so he was outside checking fences. We live on the farm. And I said, hey, come inside. I was able to call him. And I said, hey, I think I'm about to die. And
you said that?
Oh, yeah. I was like, this is life-threatening. I feel like I'm about to die.
Isn't that weird how you knew that this was something that was not,
I'm telling you, if anybody that feels this, you will know. It's the most uncomfortable feeling, but it's not just pain. It is just in your head, and it feels like a ticking time bomb that's about to explode in your head.
Oh, has this affected your health long term at all? Because you look great today. I would never have known this.
I went through several months of speech and physical therapy when I first got out. I mean, I went to one hospital. They told my husband they couldn't save me there. And then they took me to Medical City Plano. And the doctors there said the same thing. They couldn't save me. The first surgery that they did was unsuccessful. And then after I was able to get through another surgery, they were able to put some technology in my head that stopped the bleeding at least, but I had already had 8 strokes by that, you know, in the first week.
Oh my God.
So I had severe like speech, and I sat in a hospital bed for 26 days. So, and the first 10 days I was in a coma. And so with no nutrition, because they can't feed you at all, even a feeding tube, because they might, you might exasperate. So,
wow. So let's talk about how people know you, because you shot to fame in 2020 during COVID. When you
and I didn't mean to.
Well, I want you to tell us about that, because people will remember this. You owned a salon in Dallas, Salon a la Mode.
I still own it.
You still own this.
I do.
We should have had it there.
Yeah, we should have been there.
We'll do that. You need a haircut.
But
anyways,
then we wouldn't have made it to this great place in McKinney.
But you own the salon. COVID happens. Like a lot of small business owners, you had to close your doors.
I did.
And you said, we have people to pay. Our employees have kids to feed. And you went out there and stood up for the 3 million small business owners in the state. And that was a risky time to do that. Looking back now, I'm curious, do you have any regrets about what happened during COVID?
I don't have any regrets. If it happened, I would do it again right now. Mm-hmm. Like we actually shut down for a month. A lot of people think that I was just disobedient from the beginning. We shut down for a month, but as we're, you know, sitting at home for a month and going to Walmart and Lowe's and Home Depot and all of those things being open, it started to like make me think, I'm like, this is weird, because my hairstylists are trained in sanitation. They have like a lot of sanitation training. And it's weird. I know the Lowe's and Home Depot people don't. And nobody was wearing a mask at the time because it wasn't mandated or whatever. But the thing that happened was one of my hairstylists called me up after about a month and said, look, I don't mean to freak you out, but I haven't eaten in 2 days because I'm just trying to feed my kids. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to be the one responsible for that. Hmm. And so I talked to my husband and I said, let's just open the salon. And in our mind, we were just thinking about ourselves and our little business and helping them. We had no idea it was going to be like honestly a worldwide event.
And you could have done this sort of quietly, I guess, but you chose to be pretty out there about what you were doing and saying, here's what I'm doing and here's why I'm doing it. They gave you a cease and desist order. Famously, you were standing out there, you invited the press out, you ripped up that order and you said, I'm not closing this place. And you welcomed the media. Why were you so out front about it?
Well, the thing is, we never welcomed the media. So when we opened, we had to put a post out that we were going to open on Facebook, because no one would come to the salon. They wouldn't make any money if no one came. So we said, hey, we're going to open against the shutdown. It's not real. You're not really allowed to. The rules are saying you're not really allowed to, but we're going to open because our people need to make money. And you have to keep in mind, too, they were not commissioned hairstylist. I did not pay them. They did not work for me. They all rent space from me. They were all individual business owners. Therefore, they were not eligible for any kind of compensation from the government.
Wow.
And so we were in a bind. But as far as welcoming the media, they just showed up after that. And when I went to a rally that they asked me to speak at, I didn't even know I was going to speak at that. And a group called Open Texas had a rally. Mm-hmm. And they said, hey, come speak at our rally since you're opening your salon. I'm like, okay, whatever. And then that's when I tore up the cease and desist order.
And then it took off.
And then it went crazy.
Mm. You started hearing from some higher up folks. Was that immediately, or was that did it take a little while for these, you know, big name politicians here in Texas and even beyond Texas?
I know that Governor Abbott, he had like a strike force team or something they called it that reached out to me that, you know, was asking questions. But honestly, it was more trying to talk me off the ledge of doing it.
Mm. So they're telling you, shut this, you know, come on, just shut down. Let's talk about this, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And I said, well, let's talk about this. I want to know, why am I shut down? And the person that I was speaking to said, well, that's classified. And I'm like,
that's classified. Are you kidding me?
Would I kid you? And so, that's when I said, yeah, this isn't going to work. and I am going to keep the salon open, and then I had no more communication after that.
When you defied those COVID orders from the governor and from Dallas County, what you did single-handedly pushed the governor further right. Single-handedly. Have you ever spoken to the governor one-on-one about this, on the phone, face-to-face, or anything?
So the first time that we've spoken in person was recently after I won the election.
That's the first time?
Mm-hmm.
It was 4 years.
Yes.
Have you thought about that? Have you thought about your influence on him politically? Because he changed based on what you did.
And he stayed that way.
I remember watching this.
I have learned that if you want to get anything done, especially in politics, you have to draw the line and say, but what? You have to be that person to be like, oh, okay, but what?
What did he say to you when you spoke to him? Did he just congratulate you or say something else?
He congratulated me, and we spoke about something that's going on in my district, and basically haven't discussed that matter yet. I'm hoping to. I want to.
You do. What do you want to say to him?
I just want to sit in a room with him, actually, and just put it behind us. Because it's a big elephant in the room right now, I feel like. I'm not mad about it. I'm really not, because he was in a situation himself. Like, he wasn't, like, I wouldn't have wanted to be him either, trying to feel like he was trying to protect his state and the people that live there. And
But you recognize that your act changed him politically.
I do. I recognize that.
And you say that with a smile.
I mean, I'm not mad about it. And it's the only reason that I'm in politics right now. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not mad about it. I don't have any, like, I'm going to go back and get anyone. It's not that. I just want to make things better for Texas. And that's why I'm sitting here.
Interesting, too, that you understand what it must have been like in his position there, too, because, you know, there were a lot of unknowns at that time.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing what he thought was the right thing by, you know, asking these businesses to shut down and come back slowly. But boy, he's caught a lot of flack from his right and in the last election as well for having done that, and basically they were saying he caved and that he was almost a liberal. I mean, that's, you know, sort of how he was painted.
He did cave.
No, to with the restrictions. So it's interesting that
I think we're a lesson that we learned here is we can't pick winners and losers in any situation. We can't say someone is essential or non-essential when that's the way that they provide for their family. And so that was the biggest thing that we learned from that, I think. The dog groomer next door to the salon was open and essential.
Dog groomer was?
Yes.
I don't remember that.
But the people groomers couldn't be open.
No, and let me just tell you something. Call us non-essential, but we actually have clientele that don't have arms.
Wow.
And the only time, and a very, like a much older population that comes in, the clients are like that. You know how, like, you know, the older ladies get the perm sets and they come once a week and they sit under a dryer. Like, my salon did that. It's not many salons still do that, but it's like a lot of times the one time that these women get out of their house in a week. Or they come from the nursing home or whatever, and they get out and it's their time to socialize with people and get their hair done, but for health reasons they didn't have anybody to do their hair. And imagine not washing your hair for a couple of months. We were essential.
You have quite the resume. Public school teacher for 13 years,
yes.
I read.
Yes.
Salon owner, we discussed. Musician, I just learned a moment ago.
Mm-hmm.
Activist, we all know now, after the last 4 years, and now state lawmaker. So you said you weren't out to get anybody when you go down to Austin in January for the session. What are your priorities? Top three priorities for you, what are they?
So I want to represent my district, and a lot of people think that I'm from Dallas because of the salon incident.
Yeah.
I live in a very rural district. We have some cement kilns that are, cement plants and facilities that are popping up all over my district. So I think we need to get a hold of those. I don't know if you know, have you ever heard of Global Wafers? That's in Grayson County. Mm-hmm. They actually are the only semiconductor plant in the nation.
Is this the new place that just opened?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And TI is there. Mm-hmm. But
sure. You said wafers. He thought you were talking about cookies. So
I knew what she was talking about.
I threw them all there for a moment. Yeah, that's right. You guys have a huge tech plant up there, too.
Yes. And they actually, they use the rock in the ground to create their chips and what they do. And we have a cement kiln that's coming in there that's going to interfere with that. The vibration in the ground will interfere with that. So there is no law to protect Global Wafers and that facility right now because they're the first ones in the nation. So
cement kilns, what else? What else are you looking
at? Well, of course, we need to limit the emergency powers that the governor has.
But they've tried that for two or three sessions now. That can't get passed. Why not?
You know what? There's a lot of problems in the Texas House, and hopefully with all of the incoming freshmen coming in, we will get a lot more conservative legislation passed.
Are you going to carry that bill about limiting the governor's powers during an
emergency?
Well,
Representative Brian Harrison has already filed one. He filed the one 2 years ago, but I am going to work with him to make sure that we get that passed.
Because you didn't text him and say, let me have it this session?
No. You know what? I know I'm a freshman, and it actually, with it coming in with an incumbent, but I'm going to joint author it.
Okay.
So I am going to be a part of it, but as a freshman, I know that it's hard to get things passed.
Is this one of those things that you'd like to talk to the governor about if and when you get that meeting to just, you know, kind of clear the air?
Maybe. I think it'll be interesting if we do pass it in the House and the Senate pass, you know, and it gets through to the governor's desk, what he's going to do.
Yeah. So what's number three, Shelley? What's the third priority you have?
We need to close down the border. I mean, it right now it's affecting our schools. It's affecting the hospitals.
In your district, it's affecting the schools in your district?
The sex trafficking and all of the things that is happening is a problem in every district. Most people don't know that it's happening, but it is a huge problem, and it needs to be shut down immediately. And I'm really excited to have President Trump there to help us.
Now, the
federally.
Governor would say that he's done a great job at that. He would say that he has, you know, expended a lot of money, a lot of political capital in doing that. Has it not been enough in your estimation?
I think it's hard to do it as, I mean, we could close the border in Texas. It's the wall isn't there, but what keeps them from coming around Texas and coming into our state? So it's we need help from the federal government.
So now, when you say close the border, a lot of people go back and forth every day, you know, shopping, working, etc. And of course, you have this enormous amount of commerce that's, you know, coming and going every day. What do you mean exactly when you say close the border?
Keeping the illegal immigrants from coming in, basically.
And you see that still being something that the state needs to be spending time and money on, even with an incoming President Trump again?
Yeah, it's going to take both of us to shut it down, for sure.
What is your stance on vouchers? I was curious about this just because, you know, as Jason mentioned, you're a former public school teacher here in mm-hmm. Texas. You're from one of these more rural areas, and traditionally it has been Republicans in those rural areas that have stopped vouchers from going forward.
Right.
What's your thought on that? Some folks, you know, out there, a lot of folks say that they worry that vouchers would cripple public schools.
I think that this ESAs or vouchers should be a separate bill from the bill that helps public schools. I think that would help it tremendously if we keep them separate. I am a fan of ESAs. It doesn't affect my district, so it's not a top priority for me because we don't have a lot of private schools or charter schools. We have a couple in my district.
But wouldn't they pop up, you think?
Possibly, but it would take a while for those to pop up. But I think that, and I've spoken to a lot of the superintendents in my district, and they're doing a great job with the money that they have. Mm-hmm. And if you know that schools are paid by their daily attendance, and so if you have a school that's like a 2A where, like my stepson goes to, you're not working with a ton of money. Mm-hmm. They don't have a huge elaborate fields. They don't have their metal barn buildings. A lot of the school has, you know, like mm-hmm. the administration building and everything. Mm-hmm. So they're not blowing money all over the place. They're not the problem. Mm-hmm. I do want to make sure that they have the financing and the funding that they need. I think teachers need a raise, period. I think the teachers...
That didn't happen last time. It was talked about a lot. They had this huge surplus, and then it just died there in Austin. And we also didn't see the allotment per student go up. We haven't seen that go up since 2019, and we all know what inflation has done since 2019.
Exactly. And we need to do better with that. So I will say that as far as the ESAs are concerned, will I sign on to a good ESA bill that doesn't tie the hands of private schools and doesn't get in the doesn't ruin what Texas has for homeschoolers and all of those things? I will sign on to a perfect ESA bill, but I also in return want to make sure that the rural public schools in my district get what they need. Those teachers are making about $45,000 a year,
and
they have a college education. A lot of them are coaching and doing all of these other things.
Working 65 hours a week in some cases.
Probably
I mean, they take
more,
a lot home with
yes,
them.
Yes, the coaches that have my stepson's team, they're working 14-hour days, and they're making $45,000 to $50,000 a year. That's unacceptable, and we will never have college graduates coming out saying, I want to be a teacher with that. We also need to do better with their retirement and things like that.
Would you have to get it all to say, okay, I'll support that, the vouchers?
I'm going to sign on to a voucher bill because I know in some of the rural area, in the urban areas, that is a need. There are in some urban areas where kids are forced to go to a specific school and the parents have no choice with that. That's not the case where we live, but as a Texan, I want to make sure that those kids have the parents have the opportunity to empower themselves and say, I want my kid to go here.
And just to remind our listeners and our viewers, ESAs are education savings accounts. That's what the governor, lieutenant governor, proposed last session. And they didn't call it, when I interviewed Lieutenant Governor Patrick lately, he didn't call it school vouchers, he called it school choice. But I'm curious, do you think, Shelley, are there finally enough votes to get an ESA, a voucher, or any type of program like school choice passed this session?
I think it's passing.
You think there are finally enough votes for that?
Yes.
100%.
Yes. And here's the thing. I'm going in saying this, and what I campaigned on, and before I even got elected, I said school ESAs are passing. You want to send someone up there with some public school knowledge to go up there and fight for you for the rural schools. And that was huge for me. I'm going in there saying this is going to pass. We need to make sure that we get what we need for our rural public schools while this is passing.
So on day one, when you become a state legislator, you're sworn in by the Secretary of State. The House of Representatives in Austin is also going to elect a new House Speaker. Mm-hmm. Who are you planning to support?
Not Dade Phelan.
The incumbent.
Yeah. So, I will never vote for him.
And tell us why.
He makes deals with Democrats to get them to elect him as Speaker, and those keep conservative legislation from passing.
And the deals you're talking about is he lets Democrats chair some committees in the House,
several committees, but it's not just that. If you look and see what Democrats have filed compared to Republicans and see what has passed, we're being run by Democrats.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, who will you support, Shelley?
I will support David Cook for Speaker. And the reason why is he has come out with, we have said this is the reform that Texas needs, and we came out with the contract with Texas.
Sure.
And what we said is, in order for the House to perform correctly and fairly, and this is not against Democrats, this is fairly for everyone, this is the reform that we need to make it run smoothly, and he has agreed to do all of those things. So
isn't David Cook, though, a long shot? I mean, Do you think he can get the gavel?
He has more votes right now than Dave Phelan does.
But Phelan can rely on the Democrats to support him, too, if Democrats decide to do that.
Right, but the Republican bylaws say that if on December 7th, when we have our Republican caucus,
right,
if someone gets to 53 votes, then everyone else that's left has to go and say they will vote for the person that gets 53. I think Dave's at like 47 or 48 right now.
So wow. You said that Democrats are essentially, you know, running the show. I think that might come as the biggest surprise to Democrats in this state to hear that. We've seen in the past couple of sessions probably some of the most conservative legislation coming out that than we've seen in maybe decades. Mm-hmm. You don't think that's been enough?
I don't think so. I think if you look at the Republican Party platform, they have like 8 things that they've asked for, and they just don't get done. They don't get done at all. With me being a teacher, and you tell me like, let's close the border, let's not have Democrat chairs, let's do all of, like, to me, it's like a list. Let's check it off and let's go. And it just seems to be always a fight.
So are there two, and we've asked others this before on this podcast, are there two Republican parties in this state? It almost seems like there's two very distinct strains.
I don't know if you would call it two Republican parties. I think that there's a power struggle, and there's a lot of us that are trying to unify as many people as possible on the right side, what we consider the right side, and there's some that are willing to do whatever to keep the power.
How's that going to shake out?
Your guess is as good as mine. I can just tell you, though, I'm not voting for Dade Phelan.
One bill that continues to get introduced that doesn't go anywhere is the one you mentioned that would limit the governor's emergency powers. I want to ask you that one more time, though. Why do you think that has not been approved so far?
I'm not sure. There's a lot of bills that
continue to get brought up every year. I
mean, they're brought up, sure. and they die. And it's really easy for a bill to die. And we just haven't had the support. Enough people that have the balls to stand up and say that's not right. And so I think we have a lot of that coming in.
Are you ready for the politics in Austin?
I think so.
But you can't go it alone in Austin. You got to work with people.
I've already been working. There's about 25 of us. We've already been working together. We talked about being on signal groups together. We meet at least monthly. A lot of the incoming freshmen have already been meeting, and we're way ahead of any other class that's ever come in.
You know, if we read through social media, you know, anything that mentions you, I mean, people have an opinion very strong one way or the other.
Right.
I would say that, you know, among Texas politicians, you know, representatives in the House, you would probably be considered maybe one of the more polarizing figures. Like, people know exactly what they think about you. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about that?
I think I surprise people because I've already been to Austin and I've spoken to lobbyists and other people. And the first thing they say is, you're not anything what I thought you were like.
What they think you were going to be like?
I don't know. They saw me arguing publicly with the governor on national TV, and that's how they met me. So if anybody else would have been in that position of like, you're in the biggest fight of your life and TV cameras are in your face the whole time and you're having to fight for what you're doing, people would think, man, what a bee, you know, or like, wow, well, she thinks she's something or something like that. But it was the mama bear in me that was coming out, and some people didn't like that. But there's a lot of people that have come around and said they were wrong. I've had thousands of people come up and apologize to me. They said, I thought you were something else, and I'm so sorry.
And you got the attention of everyone, as we mentioned earlier. You know, Trump, Senator Cruz, the governor, the lieutenant governor, the attorney general, the Supreme Court of Texas, when all of this was going down. Were you blown away by what all was happening? I mean, they were scrambling at the top of government to undo what had happened and, you know, get you out of that jail, even though, you know, it was the governor's order in particular that, you know, kind of led to this. They were scrambling.
I didn't know. I mean, I spent 3 days and 2 nights in jail. I had no idea what was going on. And me, I was not political before this, so I didn't understand what it even would take to get me out of jail. Or honestly, I didn't even really understand why I was even in jail. Like, none of it made sense to me, which is why I stood up. I didn't know the particular, what a mandate was. I didn't know how it differed from a law. I just knew it was wrong. What they were doing was wrong, and I had to stand up.
Now, you say that you weren't political before this, and I don't know how much you read the Dallas Observer or if you've ever read the Dallas Observer, but I want to ask you about this just to sort of clear the air on this. They wrote, curiously, so there was a GoFundMe account that was set up for you, and I mean, people responded like crazy. I think it was more than $500,000 that was thrown into that, you know, after what you were going through there. The Dallas Observer wrote, curiously, her GoFundMe account was established and activated one day before she officially reopened for business. The fund was organized by a frequent contributor to the alt-right, a QAnon-friendly site. And then they asked, did Luther truly just wake up one day and decide to open her business, or was she awakened, as some of her critics suggest, and set up the media event where she announced her plan to reopen as a deliberate act of provocative political theater? So let me just ask point blank. Did you have any, I think that the laugh answers this, but did you have any political ambition, even a notion of a political ambition before this, or had anybody approached you about political ambitions and saying, hey, we'd like to support you. Here, can you do this? Can you do this, you know, essentially a stunt so that we can get name recognition behind you and get you pushed through?
No, that never happened. And we never called the media in advance of all of this, ever. They just showed up. We did put a Facebook out, a post out on Facebook saying, hey, we're going to be open, but we had to, or else we'd be all be sitting there and doing nothing. Yeah. But as far as the media, like we rolled up on the first day and there were helicopters over the salon and we were like, oh my gosh. And the reason, and I think the gentleman's name that started the GoFundMe, I want to say his name is Hire is his last name, I think.
Yeah.
And he reached out to my husband and said, hey, do you think that we should start something? Because we were part of a, like, Warren Nord was my attorney.
Oh, yeah.
And he's awesome, by the way.
Yeah. Well known, very well known.
And he was doing, like, a class action suit for a bunch of people that were going to go against the ordinance. And so it were several businesses, and we were just a part of that. And then right before when we put out the post, I think we're going to open, he's like, you're probably going to need, because he was doing it pro bono for us at the beginning. But then when we decided we were going to open, he's like, I think we better start something because you might need some more legal assistance than what you think. And we're like, okay, well, we didn't know. We're like, whatever. All right. And so that's why that opened. And then I didn't get a call. The first night I was in jail, I didn't get a phone call. And so I go to jail. It was like 4 p.m. or something, if I remember correctly. And I'm just sitting in the jail and I'm like, have no idea what's going on. Didn't get to talk to anyone, didn't get to do anything. And then when I woke up the next morning and I called my husband and I'm like, hey, you know, the collect call, like, will you take this collect call from whatever jail? And he answers and he's telling me all the stuff that's going on. And then he tells me that he was on Sean Hannity. And I'm like, what is going on, you know? And we weren't political. I knew who Sean Hannity was, but I'm not like everybody does now, you know? And then he's like, and by the way, like, there's a GoFundMe and it has like $150,000 in it. And I'm like, what? And that was the first I'd heard of it. So it was crazy.
So you didn't even really know Sean Hannity that well as a viewer. So when you say you weren't political before this, not only are you saying that you weren't thinking of running for office, you weren't even plugged into politics very much?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, you could look at my voting record, and I think I voted in the presidential elections twice in my life. That's embarrassing to say, by the way, now that I'm so politically involved and the people that don't vote, I want to shake them and say, I was you. I did not even, I barely voted. It's embarrassing.
Wow.
Yeah.
But this one issue just brought you out then.
Well, I mean, it was, yeah. I mean, yeah. My dad's a 26-year Marine veteran. And when that judge told me that he wanted me to apologize, and I'm like, my dad was literally in the Vietnam War and I'm going to apologize? I can't. And he knew as soon as the judge said that, my husband was like, oh, she's going to jail because that's just not going to happen.
And he was right.
He called it.
Turns out he was right.
He's doing interviews with Hannity here. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, a while back had Ed Lavandera on. You've dealt with him at CNN. He did this whole special called Deep in the Pockets of Texas, I think it was called. He noted that, I mean, this is your, third run for office in Texas?
I ran 3 times.
And he noted that Ferris Wilkes and Tim Dunn, big-time billionaires out in West Texas, support a lot of very conservative causes here in Texas, had donated 80% to 90% of the money that you brought in. Can you tell us a little bit about them and why they are so firmly behind you and, you know, the obvious next question is always, did they expect something in return for all that money?
Yeah. So to be honest with you, I've only talked to in person Mr. Wilkes, I think one time. I met him at like an awards banquet and it just thanked him and it was brief. And that's the only time he's ever reached out to me or talked to me. So as far as they had asked is zero from him. As far as Tim Dunn is concerned, I've probably talked to him in person. Like, he vetted my husband and I before he decided to get in my race. We actually went to his house and sat down, and they asked us all of these questions for about, I don't know, it seemed like 5 to maybe even 8 hours. I don't even know. It was a long time. But it was more about, like, tell us about who you are. Tell us how you were brought up. What are your parents like? They just wanted to, before they invested, wanted to know more about us.
So they weren't ticking off how you know, feel about certain issues necessarily.
No, there was no political issues, except for that they were very, they really liked the fact that I had the guts to stand up for what I thought was right. And that's what made me stand up to them. And the first campaign that we ran was a special election, and we needed like $1 million to even be in the race at all. And they, of course, they knew that. I had no idea. And they, when they first vetted me, he's like, I don't think that we're going to, you know, give you the money this time, but we could give you all the political advice, you know, and what are you going to do if we don't give you the money? And I'm like, well, I know that I'm supposed to run. So like, I'll just figure it out. You know,
what do you mean you're supposed to run? You felt it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so with or without money, you were going to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And the next day we got a phone call that we got $1 million.
On that note, what do you think about all the money in politics? And billionaires do have a lot of sway, and you know, they've helped you, of course, but they've helped a lot of people, and not just billionaires on the right, billionaires on the left. Are we getting the best people in Austin and in Washington because so much money is needed to get in the door?
I think this last election cycle, especially in the primary, we took a big chunk out of the problem in Texas, and we're getting a lot of regular people in office that are fighters and want to stand up for what's right. And so if you're asking me, was it worth it this time and all the money, I would say yes. In this last primary, we're getting some great people in, and I'm excited to go in and fight with them for sure.
Let me ask about another political issue, property taxes in this state. They remain high. I think it's one of the issues on your website as well. How does the state lower those? No one wants a sales tax. No one wants to pay these exorbitant property taxes, but Texas has some of the highest in the nation.
It's the hardest thing that we're going to go in and try to fix, but it has to be fixed. You don't own your home in Texas. You never own it, ever. And the biggest thing is, a lot of people, if you go to the cities, they'll tell you it's the appraisals. You know, but that's not necessarily the problem. It's like, we just fought something in my district where the city was trying to raise their property taxes by, like, I don't know, double them in one hearing, and probably hoping that no one showed up to that city council meeting, but we happened to be there and it didn't pass. But we've got to get a hold on these appraisals that are crazy, but also raising property taxes without a public vote should be illegal, and right now that's not illegal.
So if a city wants to raise taxes, that should go to a public vote?
Yes.
Or any entity, school yes. district, any of those?
Yes, 100%.
Todavía hablamos, habla español?
Ahorita sí.
Sí,
hablo
okay.
español, sí.
Nice, I like that.
He loves to show off. Well, yeah.
You learned
sí,
Spanish.
Sí, hablo español.
And so I'm curious, did you teach ESL, English as Second Language?
I'm certified to teach it, but I never taught it. I'm actually certified to teach 5 or 6 different things, along with, you know, ESL and PE and bilingual elementary school. But my main teaching field was like high school Spanish, all levels.
What's your thought with this Trump administration coming in and the thought of, you know, rounding up immigrants? There's been a lot of talk about that here in Texas and what that could mean for the economy, particularly the booming construction industry. Do you have thoughts on that?
I do. I think what they're doing is they're going to make sure that they get rid of the people that are violent first. I think we have a lot of that, especially in Texas right now. But them, it's going to take them a while to hunt down all of these guys that have already created felony offenses, and the ones that are on the watch list. That's going to take a while. But as far as the ones that are here and working, and we've got to either get them legalized somehow, or they need to go back until we can get them legally here. But whoever's here needs to be here legally.
Do you have concerns about what that could do to the Texas economy, though? Some folks have raised that you know, there's so many people working in the shadows that kind of keep this whole thing going, the economy.
I think a lot of those people have work visas or are here legally, and I don't think that if we clean out the country with and make sure that it's only legal immigrants here, and we speed up the process to get legal, that we would have a problem.
What kind of challenges do you expect to face in Austin?
Well,
you thought about that one.
I just don't want to play games. I don't, and it's a lot of games in the Texas House. It's a tit for tat and not just doing what's right. And so I'm not afraid of it, but I'm there to get stuff done, and I don't want to play around. And so I'm not looking forward to that, and I'm not willing to sacrifice my morals or my values for anything.
Does it worry you, though, if you get a Speaker Dade feeling?
I'm not worried. It'll be a bigger fight, but it doesn't worry me. There's a lot more people here now that can put a stop to a lot of what he's doing. We might not pass bills, but we don't need more laws anyway. Like, I'd rather kill them all. We have enough to kill legislation, and that's good.
But you think you could work with him if you needed to?
Sure.
Could you work with Democrats, do you think?
Absolutely.
Do you think it'll surprise some Democrats there?
That I want to work with them?
Yeah, you talked about how you surprise people a lot of times. Do you think that you can actually find common ground with some Democrats?
Sure. I mean, I was actually, you know, because we do events with, and there's Democrats there, and I've already befriended a couple of them. A lot of people don't know, we raise kangaroos, and so this was, I know.
You're sort of a collector of animals, aren't you?
Yeah,
wow. You've got a menagerie there.
We have a horse rescue and all stuff, but, you know, like, we brought one of our kangaroos to one of the events, and I mean,
that's an icebreaker.
I mean, it's fun. And they're like, you're the lady with the kangaroo. And no, but that, I mean,
that's what they know you as, the lady with the kangaroo.
Hilarious. Well, so, yeah, right now, yeah. Maybe. But it is an icebreaker. But we're finding out that we're all just regular people. We have our thoughts on things, but we actually think a lot the same, especially if they're religious and godly. We think a lot alike, and so we're going to find a lot of things that we're going to agree on.
It probably helps a lot too if they're an animal lover.
I mean, maybe so.
I mean, it sounds like you collect them.
Yeah.
My last thing for you is, you know, after what you've been through, you know, forget about the salon stuff, forget about running for office multiple times, the health issues recently with, you know, all the strokes and the aneurysm. I'm curious how that changed you, like your outlook on life and your outlook on politics. That has to change you when you go through something like that.
Yeah, it did. So I wasn't supposed to live through that. Like, I should not be. I mean, I know I'm sitting here talking to you and everybody's like, it must not have been that bad. If you looked at any pictures of me or saw any video of me, I was not myself, and I should have died. I had speech impediments and stuttering, and I couldn't think of regular words, and went through a long time feeling sorry for myself, sitting around after that, honestly, like not washing my hair, not showering. Like, I mean, people go through, and I want to be honest about that because there's people that are going through that. And you can feel sorry for yourself for a little while, but until I started getting back into politics and getting that fire back, my husband was like, my wife was gone for a little while until, honestly, I came out for one of the first times I walked outside, and it had been months since I'd been outside.
Wow.
And I go outside and he's working in the chicken coops, and I'm like, what are you listening to? And he was listening to the Ken Paxton impeachment on something. And I'm like, what's going on? Because I had no idea, right? Because I'd been in the hospital. And he's like, they're trying to impeach Ken Paxton. And I'm like, why? You know, and he stood up for me from the beginning. And so we're friends. And so I go back inside and I start looking up politics, and it fired me up. And that was one of the initial things that got me to say, you know what, I need to run one more time. So I will tell you, it changed me as a person. I don't think the same way. I don't sweat the small stuff, but I'm also more compassionate. I'm thankful for each day. I literally wake up and I'm like, thanks God, thank you for letting me wake up again today. The time that I have now, I feel is almost borrowed. I'm living like an extended second life now, and I'm grateful for that, and I want to pay that forward.
Have you stopped doing anything because of the health issues?
Well, I don't drink anymore, so that's new. But not that I was a big drinker before. Sure. I didn't like, you know, whatever. But like I don't drink. I haven't sang since then, because when I had the feeding tube in my nose for such a long period of time, it did something to my nasal cavity, and it makes it to where it's hard for me to hear. I have an upcoming surgery where they're supposed to try to fix that. But it's hard for, like, I hear you, obviously, but it sounds different when I try to sing. And so I haven't performed much publicly since then, because I want to get that fixed. Hopefully they'll be able to fix it. But if not, I may not be able to.
But other than that, do you notice any difference in yourself? I mean, I would never know. Yeah, I would never know.
I have, like, from all the strokes, my right arm kind of feels like, I call it like a neon sign, a buzzing neon sign. The nerves in there are a little, and they get a little sensitive sometimes. And so I feel it, but I've kind of just learned to live with that. And then sometimes, like, really long words that I don't use all the time, I can't remember them. And so, once someone says it, I'm like, what's that word when you blah, blah, blah. And once someone says it, then it's stuck in my brain and I have it.
Heck, I go through that with vocabulary though. So you're doing great. I mean, this is amazing.
I tell that to my husband. I'm like, I can't believe it. He goes, babe, you're like 50 years old, like whatever. And so sometimes I think it's the stroke, and he's like, you're 50. So
yeah, it might just be something that's not at all related to that.
It really is a miracle. It really is. I know you're looking at me trying to see if my face is drooping at all or anything. It should be. I shouldn't. And my doctor will tell you right now, my neurosurgeon, she's like, I there's no science to explain why you are back this way.
But you gained compassion, more compassion out of this.
100%.
You think that'll change how you see issues?
It does already.
It does. What issues?
I mean, I don't know specifically, but I have more tolerance and more patience to listen to people when they tell me about why they believe such a way, when before I'm like, oh, that's crap, you know, whatever, you know. Now I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't see it that way. But am I always going to look at the Republican priorities and follow those and what my district wants? Yes. And so, yes, I might be compassionate about how you're feeling and what you're thinking, but if it's not what my district wants, I'm going to vote my district.
Shelley Luther, it's been a fascinating conversation. I learned a lot about you that I couldn't find anywhere else, even kangaroos.
The kangaroo lady. She's the kangaroo lady.
You only voted twice before you got into politics and decided to stand up. So thanks for meeting us. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
We can't wait to see how things go in your first session.
This was really fun. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for doing it.
Yeah.
Click subscribe and get Y'olitics every week. Y'olitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.